listening to a TJSideways.com podcast. Here is your host, TJ Buchenbarger.
Thank you, Beth. Coming to you from the Engine Pro Studios, just inside of Door, Michigan. That's right. We've picked up roots since we've last recorded one of these podcasts, and we are now located in the hometown of Bob Seneker in Door, Michigan. So we made the move. And now that we've kind of settled in a little bit, we had an opportunity to get everything unpacked, and I had a chance to get a podcast up for you. So the first in quite a while that we've had, and it's a great story. We had a chance to talk to Josh Turner. Now, Josh has been driving sprint cars for 8 years and picked up his first feature victory Saturday night at the Butler Motor Speedway. We go over some different things, like what advice Josh might have for a local racer that maybe hasn't seen success right away, like in feature wins, and what kind of perseverance it takes, about his feature win on Saturday, some of his sprint car exploits, the tough start to his season upside down at Atomic Speedway, and more. It was really fun to sit down with Josh this evening. I hope you enjoy it. And here is Josh Turner, sprint car feature winner with the Sprint on Dirt over at the Butler Motor Speedway. Josh Turner, we were just talking before we started recording here. 8 years. It doesn't seem like it's been 8 years since you've kind of first started as a driver on the sprint car scene. But last Saturday, you finally knocked out your first feature win. So congratulations.
Thanks, man. Yeah, 8 years is at first it didn't seem quite like it'd been 8 years. But, 2011 is not so distant as it seems. It definitely, I guess, is 7-8 years ago, or however you figure that. But yeah, it was definitely a good feeling. I'm still, to this day, I'm not entirely sure exactly how to put it into words, but it was it felt good, to say the very least. Anyways,
and when you look at that first win, it wasn't a slouch. I mean, there were two blondes in the field, a pretty good field, and it was a sod show at Butler, which means it's probably a little deeper than normal. So, I mean, it's not, I mean, you picked a very good time to pick up that victory, and it was against some formidable competition.
Yeah. There's a little bit of backstory there. Long years before I got started racing for myself, you know, I spent a lot of time with the blonde family and hauling Chad Blond around there, racing with him. And, you know, obviously, you know, traveling around doing, you know, those guys were doing the All-Star Tour at the time. And, you know, I was privy to a lot of information that Chad was, I guess, willing to divulge to me, just because we'd been friends for a lot of years. And, it was kind of a bittersweet thing. we found ourselves there. We fell back right out of the gate, and I knew we had a pretty good car. I was really hoping that the fuel would burn off and the car would come around a little quicker than what it did. But, you know, about halfway through, that thing started to kind of fall into line, and we got going there. I don't know, it was probably 10 laps in or so, and things worked out pretty good to where we caught the cautions just right. I mean, throughout the whole evening, the cautions worked in our favor, which, you know, that's kind of a thing at Butler where, you know, cautions are what they are. But, I figured I was going to need traffic to get a hold of Chad, and I was catching him in traffic. But, it just kind of didn't work that way. And I think there was 3 or 4 laps to go. We had another caution. I found myself sitting second. Jason had got turned around there, and it was kind of a hairy situation to get by him. I was glad he saved it, but I was glad that he didn't really spin right around in front of me, because things were going to go south in a big hurry. But, we took the green there with, I think it was like 4 laps to go. And I knew, you know, nobody wanted to run the top of the racetrack. I was like, well, it's been run here all night long. Might as well just put the wing in the trunk and do the best we could. you know, kind of let it sort itself out. And it worked out pretty well. It was, you know, not exactly a super intense last lap pass by any means, but at the end of the day, it was still put us out front. We had one more caution, I think, there to finish it off, and I guess it worked out pretty good, obviously. So,
can you describe the feeling when you took that checkered flag in first place for the first time on Saturday?
I really wasn't sure entirely what to think, TJ, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, I was excited, you know, to say the least. I'd be remiss to say that I wasn't as much relieved as I was excited. You know, it was, we went down the backstretch, or we took a white flag, and I damn near blew the thing off the end of turn one, you know, and I kept telling myself coming to that last restart, I'm like, you know, just keep yourself calm. Don't do anything stupid. Just do exactly what you've done for the last 23 laps and you'll be just fine. Cause it was, if I remember, it was green, white checker finish. And, we took the green and all was well. And then we came around and took the white and I don't know if I froze going into turn one or what it was, but I pert near put it into Clarendon Road. I thought for a second and, seemed to grab a hold of something and here we go. And, you know, was able to finish off the last couple of laps or the last lap. And, yeah, I crossed a stripe there. I didn't even know what to think. Yeah, I really didn't. I was kind of a loss for words.
Believe it or not, that's a pretty common thing amongst first-time wearers. A lot of people think, oh, it's a first-time wearer. They're going to be so excited. They're going to be great to interview. That's why I actually like to interview first-time wearers like 2 or 3 days afterwards, because they're so dumbfounded usually by the time they get the victory lane. It's like,
right. It's
almost like...
Yeah, it lets it sink in for a couple of days, yep.
Exactly, and they're kind of like almost a deer in headlights a little bit. But a really interesting story, because like you had said, you had done this for 8 years, and there's a lot of people out there that probably may give up before that if they don't find success. What advice would you have to a local sprint car driver that maybe hasn't found success right away? Because we kind of live in a society where we have the Kyle Larsons of the world and everything. It's like, oh, if you haven't done anything in the first couple of years, well, that's right. Not necessarily true. What advice would you give someone that might be struggling right now looking to get that first win on the local scene?
At the end of the day, the bottom line is that, you know, not all of us are blessed with Kyle Larson talent or Rico Abreu money and talent. You know, I mean, there's a lot of circumstances that you could reference in that situation, but the bottom line is that if you're not willing to work for it, then you probably don't deserve it to begin with, you know, and I guess, you know, when all seems like it's lost and you know that things are just never going to go your way. At the end of the day, you know, that's what tests your personality. That's what tests your character. You know, and you got to be willing to bear down and dig your heels in and go after it, you know. And I mean, obviously, I'm not exactly your quintessential sprint car guy. I mean, I'm 290 pounds and 6 foot or 3 inches tall or whatever I am. I think I've shrank a couple of inches over the years. But, you know, I mean, the will and the desire to do whatever it is that you're passionate about, you know, that's what overcomes all the odds. You know, you just got to bear down and work for it, you know, whether it comes to the financing side of things or the actual doings of what's going on. You know, if you're not willing to work for it, then you probably don't deserve it to begin with.
So Josh, you know, when you look at you, like when I do searches, you know, do a little research before we do this story, you see pictures of wing, right. Non-wings for cars. You've done a little bit of everything over 8 years.
Yeah, I like the non-wing stuff. I mean, I if the non-wing stuff was a little bit more, not sure exactly how to say that.
Well, it's a podcast. User-friendly, whatever way you want.
I mean,
that's an interesting term. User-friendly. Why don't you expand on that? So, what do you mean by user-friendly? Necessary distance-wise or car-wise?
I mean, distance-wise. I mean, you know, there's the MTS deal there in Michigan, which I always try to hit a couple of their races every year. You know, I mean, I work probably anywhere. It's probably an average 55 to 60 hours a week. Some weeks more, some weeks less. So, traveling isn't really conducive to myself well, you know, and my wife and I's operation here is what we got going on. But, you know, I try to hit a couple of their races, and I'd love to do more non-wing racing just because I think that the discipline in and of itself is more challenging, and it's more driver oriented, as where the wing stuff, albeit it is tough, and I'm not trying to discredit that, but you know, the wing thing is there's a lot of young guys, there's a little bit of everybody that in the wing world, you know, if you spend enough money and you just learn to just keep your hands straight and let the car do the work, you know, you're probably going to find success a little quicker than you are with the non-wing world, where you have to be disciplined. You know, you have to have the car at least, in the very least, in the ballpark. You just have to be more well-rounded, so to speak. I truly enjoy the non-wing stuff. The wing stuff, obviously, up here is more dominant, is more prevalent, so to speak, of accessibility, if you will. I mean, hell, the first time I ran non-wing in my life, I ran second to Stevie Irwin there. That was the first time I ever ran non-wing ever, and I led probably, I don't know, a little bit more than half of the feature. You know, just burned my tires up and really had no idea what I was doing, but I was having a ball, you know. So,
well, when you're working 60 hours a week, it's got to be fun if you're going to put the work into this, which was 60 hours a week, man. How are you even doing the maintenance program on that thing? You must have some really good help, or you're really good with managing time.
Well, up until this year, you know, help has been kind of scarce. You know, I mean, if you, I guess to get down to be real blunt and honest about it, you know, when you look at the economy as a whole, you know, everybody's hiring, nobody wants to work. It's kind of tough to find help, so to speak. And, you know, I mean, doing this on my solely on mine and my wife's income, it's tough to be able to find help, you know, that could come over and help during the week. But for the large majority, you know, I was blessed with a young man that came to me last year. Actually cold called my door, just knocked on my door, and I don't know, it was like 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening. He's like, "Hey, I hear you're looking for a little bit of help on your sprint car." I'm like, "Who the heck are you?" You know, I've never met this kid day in my life. And, you know, that was a blessing in and of itself. You know, he was a young kid, wanted to learn. He'd been dealing with some go-kart stuff, and that was a good deal. While it lasted, so to speak, but, you know, he was very, very, very fortunate to come across an opportunity to where he had acquired, or he had put in for a job as a lineman, like electricity type stuff, and ended up acquired a job down to, I believe it was down by Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, he was there for a couple months and then he was gone. And, you know, he says he kind of had a hard time telling me. I said, "Hey, man, I'd be kind of upset with you if you were to turn this opportunity down." You know, I said, "Racing is a great time, and I'm passionate about it as anybody. But at the end of the day, you know," I said, "this is a career that you got to keep in mind. You know, you can make a good life for yourself." So, you know, he went on to did his thing. But, you know, for the large majority, you know, over the 7.5, 8 years I've been at this, you know, it's just been myself and my wife. And, you know, it like goes back to what I was telling you before, which is, you know, if you want to do it and you want to be good at it, you know, you just got to work at it. You know, I'm not saying I'm any kind of superstar by any standards, but I've always told everybody that you'll be hard pressed to outwork me, success or not. And, you know, coming into this year, you know, just kind of things kind of fell, all the chips kind of fell right into line, so to speak. Doug Zimmerman there, obviously he had retired over the off season
again,
and I had acquired went to Tommy Dale there that owned his stuff, and I says, "Hey man, you want to sell that motor?" I said, "I'm looking for an engine." He said, "Well, I think we could probably work something out there," and it worked out pretty good. So after buying the motor, I asked him, I said, "Well, what are you going to do? You know, are you just going to sit around and drink beer, or are you going to want to go racing or what?" And he says, "Well, what are you thinking?" I said, "Well, I'd love to have you come help me if you still want to go racing. I'm not asking you for your money. I'm just asking you for your hand. You know, I'll still pay all the bills. You can just kind of do whatever you want. It's worked out pretty good so far. So he's been an absolutely, I can't even put into words how much of an asset he's been to us and our program this year. So
yeah, for those that don't know, Tom is a really good asset to the sprint car community in Michigan in general. He's helped a lot of people over the years, and so it doesn't necessarily surprise me he's helping you now too. So.
No. I mean, you know, Doug was kind of on a hiatus, so to speak, there for a year or so, and was kind of considering retiring across the board. And he put Ryan Rowe in a car, and they worked the deal out between themselves. They had some success. I mean, heck, I think they won Tom told me they won like 10 races that year. You know, I mean, I know I witnessed a lot of success on their behalf, you know, and then Doug had come back, and, you know, Tom obviously was loyal to Doug. You know, he even told me that when I asked him, I said, you know, if you want to go racing, let's go racing. He says, well, that sounds like a great idea, but I just want you to understand that if Doug ever decides you want to come back racing, why then, you know, my loyalty is to him, which, you know, like, how could you guy ever argue with that? So, that was kind of a subtle agreement between the two of us at the beginning of the year. And, you know, it's, I guess for my benefit, I'm glad Doug's enjoying retirement, so to speak.
It's worked out well for you. So what's your plan for the rest of the season? Where are we going to see you, anywhere outside of Butler, Brayley Butler on Saturday nights, or are you going to maybe get out towards the end of the year?
I'm going to try and get around a little bit. It's tough. You know, I work Monday through basically Saturday and half, if you will. You know, I work usually Saturdays or 6 o'clock in the morning till 1-2 in the afternoon. So it's kind of tough to get away and go much further than what Butler is. But, you know, there's a couple weekends coming up where Butler doesn't have any cars, or excuse me, Butler's not running sprint cars. So I think one of those weekends, I'm not exactly sure what the date is, I'll look into my calendar, but one of those weekends side is actually at Crystal. So I think we're going to try and plan on going up to that. For the most part, the schedule is just basically doing Butler. When it rains or something like that up here, which Lord knows it's rained more than enough
it's
in
rained
this region
pretty
for
much everywhere, yeah.
At least a month or so.
Yeah. Sure, yeah, I agree.
But, if something's available and I'm out of work, you know, Tom works Saturdays as well. So, you know, we kind of have conjoining schedules, so to speak. But, if it rains out here locally and we're out of work in time and we can find something else to do, then by all means. So it just kind of depends on how the work week falls, how the weather falls, and what have you.
They did some pretty significant changes to the racetrack this year at Butler. What do you think? Has it made it a little racier how they've chopped down the top there a little bit and reduced the banking?
You know, I, honestly, TJ, I'm not – They've made some changes, as far as they described what their intentions were as being they were going to reduce the banking. I'm no engineer, you know, by any standards, but as much as anything else, I don't think they necessarily reduced the banking, but Butler far and wide has been known for having somewhat of a crease in the center of the racetrack, whereas they didn't have like a progressive style of banking. It was just kind of like a lesser banking level on the lower side of the racetrack and a higher bank level on the top of the racetrack, which in turn created a somewhat of a crease right in the center. You'd find guys that just, you could waylay the thing in there in the center and it would just stick just because there was a crease there, you know, going from a lower degree of banking to a higher. And I've noticed that so far this year, the track has maintained a more of a progressive, so to speak, version of banking from the top to the bottom. So it makes it a little bit racier. If you're going to run the top, you're going to run the top. There's not a lot of middle ground, if you will. And if you're going to run the bottom, then you better be good on the bottom. So it's more of a happy medium, I guess, if anything. I would have to say that their changes have been beneficial to everybody, at least for the racing aspect of it. From the fans' perspective, it's got to look more fun.
Yeah, you passed cars to win the race there, so they obviously the bottom and the top are working. So, I mean, that's a very good thing over there. You know, 5-year plan for you racing-wise. What do you think in 5 years from now, where would you like to see yourself in sprint car racing?
Well, I mean, that's a loaded question in a lot of different ways. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I still have priorities and I still have bills to pay. You know, fortunately for me, my wife has finally attained her career and finished her schooling. So, you know, the sky's the limit as far as that goes. But realistically, you know, I guess like any other racer, I want to win as many races as I can. You know, throughout my entire career up to date, you know, I've always believed in trying to spread myself out and try to learn different disciplines. You know, a good reference for that is the non-wing thing, trying to travel around doing, you know, racing different tracks, different levels of competition, you know, tougher. You know, I've always believed that you're never going to be the best unless you beat the best, you know, and that's a tall order to fill when you figure the region that we're in here. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to think to myself that, you know, Saturday night was a fluke, because I've been confident all year that with the package that Tom Dale and I have developed, since the first night out at Atomic, when we ended up upside down in the heat race, you know, we are capable of winning races. But you know, you got to be able to put all those things that you work for into play. So, you know, I think we got a good package, and I think that, down the road, I think good things can come, you know, but running Butler as much as I have since I got started, obviously, you know, it's kind of knowing the lay of the land, so to speak, where, you know, we know where we can run and where we can't run, and, you know, and it'll test our abilities when we're able to finally actually find some time to go different racetracks and race maybe with different series, is where, you know, obviously you're kind of the traveling guy, so to speak, where, you know, you have to adapt as the night goes on. But as far as specifically to answer your question, 5-year plan, you know, I mean, I would be able to do anything and anywhere at any time. You know, it's obviously just being able to afford it, you know, and situational dependent, so to speak. So,
well, I'm sure you do have some people to thank as well that helped with that victory on Saturday.
Yeah, we started out the year a little bit on the rough side of things. First night out, like I was telling you before, we went down to Atomic Speedway just because there's nowhere else to race, and you know, work hadn't really kicked off. Working in the concrete industry, with it being cold and rainy like it was, there wasn't a lot going on, so everything was ready to go. And I said to Tom, I says, what do you think about going down to Chillicothe? He just kind of laughed. He's like, man, I'm up for racing whenever, wherever. And we went down there. We had a pretty good night. You know, got upside down, and that put us behind the eight ball, and then came back, ran a sideshow, and ended up running the Butler opener there, and ended up broke the motor that I bought from Tom. I broke the camshaft in that, so which ended up being far more serious than what we thought it was. You know, and if it weren't for the help of, you know, my good friends, Brian, Danea, you know, Danea Berry with her Career Source Plus, stepping in and helping out with some sponsorship. My boss of all things, Becker and Scriven's Concrete, you know, probably one of the best guys a guy could ever ask to work for, allows me to be able to make a good living and also be able to, you know, help me out and still go racing, as well as allowing me the time to go racing for that matter. CB Contracting, Chris Barrett there, you know, he's been a good friend of mine for a lot of years. You know, he stepped up to the plate and, I couldn't do it without the help of those people. You know, I was prepared to freshen an engine in the middle of the season. And then, you know, that whole deal got kind of dropped to my lap, and, I just wasn't real sure how that was going to play out. So, But all in all, you know, without those people, there's no way possible that we could do what we do. So
there's probably one other one you should mention. You live with
my
them.
Wife.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. I'm saving you here.
Yeah. Without my wife's blessing, I'd be in trouble.
For sure. All of us. So, well, Joshua, it's great to see you. You know, it's always neat to see the working man sprint car racer and talk to you guys, because at the end of the day, usually the more fun ones to hang out with and have a drink with afterwards. And we're all doing this for fun.
Absolutely.
And congratulations on the persistence and getting that first win. It was really neat to wake up to that the next morning and find out you had won that race.
I appreciate it, TJ. Thank you very much. Right. You know, it was pretty surreal waking up Sunday morning. You know, everybody kind of laughed and joked and said, yeah, you probably won't go to bed all night. And I was like, you know, after I got out of the race car, it was pretty warm there Saturday, so I was pretty well exhausted. I was like, you know, I don't think I'm going to have any problem falling asleep tonight. I'll probably be asleep before my head hits the pillow. But, yeah, it wasn't too many beverages consumed, which is somewhat unlike me. But, yeah, it was a good feeling. You know, it took a couple of days to sink in, and, you know, Wednesdays is our big maintenance night. So, at the end of the day, you know, it's as cool as it is. And as much as it's a feeling of accomplishment, you know, that's not the end of the season. So, you know, we'll dig in tomorrow night. We'll get everything maintenance up and be ready to go for Saturday. And hopefully we can turn it on and repeat the whole deal all over again. So.
All right. Well, congratulations and best of luck this Saturday.
All right. Thanks, TJ. I appreciate it. Take care.
That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the TJSlideways.com podcast. I'd like to thank Josh Turner for taking time out of his busy schedule to join us this evening. Of course, don't forget to support our sponsors, Engine Pro, Slade Shock Technology, All Star Performance, and Maxim Chassis. You can subscribe to the podcast on the iTunes Store, Google Play Store, Stitcher, and on Podbean. Also, you can check the website. We post it right in the front page and also in the podcast section. Thank you for listening, and we will see you down the road.